Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast from La Trobe University. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Dr. Kaelin Davenport, Senior Lecturer in Roman History at Macquarie University. This is episode CXIV, Mutilating Rome. Now that Caracalla is the sole emperor of the Roman Empire, he's able to act as he wishes. While he does little to please anyone outside the military, it's his economic and social reforms that will affect the empire for decades to come. Here's Kaelin Davenport.
Caracalla tries to consolidate his position by removing senators that he perceives to be threats to his rule. Firstly, he puts to death Helvius Pertinax, who was the son of the short-lived emperor of 193. And after Geta had been murdered by Caracalla, he joked that Caracalla had now earned the title of Geticus Maximus, or greatest conqueror of Geta. This was a pun because Getae is the Greek word for the Dacians. So it could mean the greatest conqueror of the Dacians as well as the greatest conqueror of Geta.
Yeah, not a smart joke to make.
No.
Son of Pertinax.
No, he didn't last very long after that. Caracalla also killed his own cousin, Gaius Septimius Severus Aper, who had been a consul, probably because his name included Septimius Severus, which is Caracalla's father's name.
So just something as simple as that, yeah.
Yes, so. But he actually looks for young men who are related to the imperial house in some way. So he also kills the grandson of Marcus Aurelius, Lucius Aurelius Commodus Pompeianus, who had also been consul. And he also forces Cornificia, the last surviving daughter of Marcus Aurelius, to commit suicide. Mm. So he's clearly looking for Antonine relatives, anyone who could pose a challenge to his position.
And we've seen this happen before in Imperial Rome, where it'd be quite a distant relative or even just, you know, somebody tangentially adopted who can pose a potential of being the next emperor. So he's just trying to clear the deck that thoroughly.
Very much so, and especially someone as paranoid as Caracalla as well, that he is trying to remove anyone who could possibly pose a threat, even if, you know, someone like Cornificia is an elderly woman, but she's the last surviving daughter of Marcus Aurelius. And
the troops can rally around anyone.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, Caracalla wants to be seen to be carrying on the Antonine dynasty. His name is Marcus Aurelius Antoninus.
Okay, we've got her last words there, don't we?
Yes. So Cassius Dio says Cornificia's last words are, "Poor, unhappy soul of mine, imprisoned in a vile body, fare forth, be freed, show them that you are Marcus's daughter, whether they will or not."
Mm.
So it's the end of a great dynasty, really. With Cornificius passing, we have, you know, the murder of Commodus Pompeianus, one of Marcus's grandsons. It's a major turning point there. So the Praetorian prefect Pinianus had been dismissed by Caracalla after Septimius Severus's death. He was now executed himself, along with the current Praetorian prefect Valerius Paterinus. Caracalla orders the Praetorian guard to kill them both.
Mm.
He even complains that Papinianus is executed with an axe rather than with a sword.
Complains as in it shows him disrespect.
I think because it shows him disrespect.
Yeah, if you're going to kill somebody, at least show respect.
Yeah, he'd been a Praetorian prefect, had been advisor of Septimius Severus. He deserves a good death. One of the most interesting cases is also his attempt to kill Fabius Chilo, who was an illustrious general supporter of Septimius Severus and had been urban prefect, that is, prefect of the city, for about a decade before Caracalla dismissed him from the post. So he's probably the most prestigious living senator.
Mm.
And he sends his soldiers to kill Chilo at home. And he's in the bath. In the ancient world, you never get into the bathtub because that's when someone's going to try and kill you. Begins with Agamemnon and Clytemnestra, and it just goes from there. It's, you know, it's when you're vulnerable. And they drag him out of his house through the centre of Rome. You know, he's only wearing a tunic to cover his modesty. They take him up the Via Sacra up to the Palatine. But the crowd are going crazy at the mistreatment of Fabius Chilo. Mm. So you're actually facing the possibility of popular revolt there because people are saying, what are you doing to Fabius Chilo? And this means Caracalla has to change tactic. He comes out of the palace in a military uniform, wraps his cloak around Chilo and says, what are you doing to my tutor, you know, my father? And then he blames the soldiers. So Chilo is saved. So that one, he misjudges the popularity. It's important to point out that Caracalla doesn't get rid of all his father's advisors. So there's definitely a shifting, a changing of the guard there, but he keeps Marius Maximus, one of Septimius Severus's generals, who wrote the series of biographies which the author of the Augustan history used as his major source. He was made governor of Africa and Asia. And Caracalla's uncle, for example, Iulius Avitus Alexianus, a member of the Syrian branch of the family, was also in favour, went with Caracalla on his German expedition as well. So we see a shifting of alliances. Not everyone is removed, but certainly if you can pose a threat as a potential successor to the throne, then you're out. And then some of his father's friends as well.
So this is apart from the purge of all of Geta's allies and supporters. This is just anybody who poses a threat, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, it's a real clearing of the house to try and establish his position as emperor. And this even extends to Julia Domna as well, his mother. She's forbidden from mourning Geta's death. She has to, you know, laugh and rejoice that Caracalla has been saved from Geta's conspiracy. So the stories about Caracalla's behaviour in Rome at this time aren't very positive. So he's a big fan of the chariot races. And Herodian says, and this is Herodian 4.6.4, finally the emperor did something that had never been done before. While he was watching a chariot race, the crowd insulted the charioteer he favoured. Believing this to be a personal attack, Caracalla ordered the Praetorian Guard to attack the crowd and lead off and kill those who are shouting insults at his driver. So an emperor is supposed to be able to put up with insults and jibes at the circus. That's a mark of a good emperor who's able to laugh it off and certainly, you know, support his team like a good sport and not mind if they lose. This is completely opposite.
I was trying to say, this is as far opposite as you can take it.
this is a temper tantrum, really. There's also an unpleasant incident with the Vestal Virgins, who are supposed to be sacrosanct, inviolate. One of the Vestal Virgins, he's alleged to have raped, and he put her to death as well as three others. Mm. Now, this is a standard accusation against bad emperors, that they mistreat Vestal Virgins. On the other hand, you know, four of them is not something that can be dismissed. Well, the Romans may believe there was retribution meted out on Caracalla for this because later on in his life he became impotent. So is this divine retribution? I mean, Caracalla goes around saying that he is the most self-controlled of all men. This is part of his public image. And yet we have these stories about his rape of Vestal Virgins and also mistreatment of others in a sexual way as well.
Yeah.
So he's totally denying.
Technically, the Vestal Virgins are put to death for impure activities, I suppose.
Yes.
Of which he's got the very interesting defence of Antoninus himself knows that I am a virgin. He himself knows that I am pure. Kind of insinuating that something attempted to go on between them. It's maybe an underhanded insult in his direction.
Yes, the idea that he would try and rape a Vestal Virgin is a major accusation.
And be unsuccessful at it.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, and the story of the young knight, sorry.
Oh, yes, yeah. So it was disrespectful to carry coins bearing the emperor's head into brothels. So we have a story that in Caracalla's reign, a young member of the equestrian order does this. He brings a coin with Caracalla's image into brothel. Caracalla's spies report it. He was later imprisoned, but he was imprisoned for so long that Caracalla died in the meantime, so he must be imprisoned for several years and then was released.
But he would have been executed.
He would have been, but obviously...
They didn't get around to doing it,
probably because the amount of people carrying coins bearing the emperor's image into brothels.
It shows the extreme reaction to insulting Caracalla that there was at the time. It's probably not a stretch to say that Caracalla never knew about this incident, but people were reacting that much to his reactions around Rome.
Very much so. So part of the story of Caracalla's reign is the climate of fear.
Yeah, climate of fear.
So people within the senatorial and equestrian orders were turning on each other. They were denouncing people who had done wrong in order to win favour.
Mm.
So quite often you hear about Caracalla being opposed to the Senate. That wasn't true. I tend to think of things in terms of shifting alliances. There are people within the Senate who are trying to curry favour with him, others who are opposing him. But it really is this climate of fear which is encouraging these people to denounce their friends and relatives to the imperial administration.
Mm. So with Caracalla being this brutal and strict with Rome, he's really got to keep the military on side. And we know that he's paid them off in order to legitimise his position after murdering Geta. But how does he keep them in line with him and what he wants to do?
So the first way to do this is to increase their pay.
Mm.
Now, listeners may remember that Septimius Severus had already doubled army pay. Now, that was necessary because it was their first pay rise since the reign of Domitian, so in 100 years. But Caracalla then increased it by 50% again. In the past 20 years, the pay of an ordinary soldier had increased from 1,200 denarii per year to 3,600.
Mm.
That's a massive increase which needs to be found from the imperial budget.
So how's he going to go about funding this then?
Well, the first way is to try and play around with the coinage. So he introduces a new silver coin, which is called the Antoninianus, named after himself, nice and humble.
Yep.
Now, it was tariffed as worth 2 denarii, so 2 of the current silver coins, double denarius, but it only contained 1.5 times as much silver. So people were essentially being ripped off. By introducing this coinage, that was a way for the imperial government to save some money there.
But devaluing the currency long term,
yeah.
which we know that never works well.
No, and it's going to be the story really of the third century, is that the Antoninianus takes over from the denarius, the standard silver currency. But by sort of the middle decades of the third century, there's very little silver in it at all.
But in the short term for Caracalla, it does pay for the army that he needs and keeps them on side. But there's other avenues open to him for revenue raising in the empire.
Yes. So the crowns which the cities of the empire are supposed to give to him on the occasions of victories or anniversaries, these started off as being real gold crowns. There was a practice in the Hellenistic period, so even before Rome came into the Greek East. But now it was mainly a monetary payment for the creation of gold crowns, but really it went to the imperial treasury.
Yeah.
So Cassius Dio complains about that in particular because he's from Bithynia in the Greek East. He also increases the tax on emancipating slaves. So when you free slaves, you have to pay a tax to the treasury. So increasing taxes is one thing. You could also increase the number of people who are liable to pay the tax as well. And this is when we get to one of the most interesting developments of Caracalla's reign, the so-called Constitutio Antoniniana.
Mm. Yeah, this is a major change, I suppose, in the fabric of Rome and what defines it to be a Roman. And if Caracalla had better PR, he could have spun this so much to his benefit. But it's essentially increase the population of the Roman Empire that legitimately pays taxes, therefore you will get more money.
This is the way Cassius Dio spins it in his Roman history. So the Constitutio Antoniana is an edict of Caracalla which gives Roman citizenship to all free people within the Roman Empire. Cassius Dio says this was a way to increase the number of people who paid these indirect taxes. Mm. So in terms of, I know taxation isn't the most thrilling thing, but it's actually quite important in this regard to try and work out who paid what in the Roman world. So people in Rome and Italy hadn't paid direct taxation, the poll tax, since 167 BC. And that's because of all the wealth flowing in from Rome's conquests around the Mediterranean. Provincials had to pay this poll tax unless they were granted what is called the jus italicum, the Italian right, which sort of made them little corners of Italy. So if your city had supported an emperor, you might get the Italic right. But all Roman citizens had to pay inheritance tax, what we might call an indirect tax, and taxes on the emancipation of slaves. And this actually went to supporting the army. This was an initiative of the Emperor Augustus to help sustain the army pay. By increasing the number of citizens throughout the empire, Caracalla did increase the amount of people who had to pay these indirect taxes as well as citizens. So they paid the poll tax as well as things like inheritance tax, you know, tax on the emancipation of slaves. This would have been a major win for the imperial coffers.
Mm. So tax aside, though, how big a deal was this to the Roman Empire? Was it significant to suddenly have people legitimately having citizenship throughout the empire? It would have technically done a lot to the population, I suppose.
It was a big deal. And this is something that actually historians are working on at the moment. There's a scholar called Miles Levan in Scotland who's working on this and suggests that there are far fewer Roman citizens before the Constitutio Antoniana than we would previously thought, particularly a lot of wealthy people in the Greek East were, you know, respectable individuals, but they weren't Roman citizens. So now they've become citizens. They are eligible to enter the equestrian and senatorial orders. They're eligible to stand for Roman office, to identify themselves as part of the government of the empire. But it also means that Roman law now applies more extensively, and it has a major impact on law throughout the empire. So there's Roman law, but there's also within the provinces, there's local laws, local customs. And now people are going to be interacting with the Roman legal system a lot more, and the local laws are going to fall into abeyance or perhaps even come into conflict with Roman law.
Mm.
So the fact that you now have all free inhabitants of the empire as citizens means over time there's going to be less of a distinction between citizens and non-citizens and more between different grades of citizens. So that's something we really find in the late empire, is that the citizens are split into two groups. The honestiores, the more honourable people who are immune from baser punishments like whipping and being condemned to the mines, and the humiliores, the more humble people who are still Roman citizens, but they're not immune from these baser punishments.
Yeah.
So there's distinctions within the grades of citizenship.
Yeah, and I guess now that so many people have citizenship, you need to distinguish them some other way. Yeah,
exactly. That's something that Caracalla wouldn't have foreseen, but it's something that's a major impact of the Constitutio Antoniana.
So how did he justify to Rome at the time? Because you're not going to say to people, okay, look, I need to pay the soldiers, this is why I'm doing this. What sort of PR did he spin?
Caracalla portrayed the gift of Roman citizenship as an act of thanksgiving to the gods for saving him from Geta's conspiracy. And we know this thanks to a papyrus, which was discovered in Egypt in 1910, which, although fragmentary, were able to reconstruct as part of Caracalla's edict. So I'll read out an excerpt from that, which is restored, but the key words are there. So this is from a translation by the historian Clifford Ando. "I might give thanks to the immortal gods because they preserved me from so great a conspiracy. Therefore, believing that I would be able to respond with piety and grandeur appropriate to their greatness if I were to lead to the temples of the gods all those now among my people, and as many as shall come into that number, I give Roman citizenship to all those dwelling under my rule.
Mm.
And he goes on to say, this decree will spread magnificence of the Roman people. So he's actually linking this as an act of universal thanksgiving for saving him from Geta's conspiracy, binding all the peoples of the empire together.
Yeah, and also spreading the word of the empire and the good name of the empire. It's a very good PR spin, and his actual words as well.
Yes, yes, or those of his administration.
Decree, yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And it's really interesting. So since Caracalla gave them citizenship and his name was Marcus Aurelius Antoninus, everyone who gained citizenship from him took the name Marcus Aurelius.
Like freeing a slave almost.
It's exactly the same. Yeah, it's exactly the same sort of principle. So we have records of soldiers in the 210s, and before every name, there now is Marcus Aurelius. So it might be Marcus Aurelius Theon, Marcus Aurelius Serapio, Marcus Aurelius Cleon. They've all got those names. Yeah. And it's like they just appended that beginning of whatever names they had originally. So usually we can tell if someone is freed by the Constitutio Antoniana because they have the name Marcus Aurelius. Mm. Of course, Antoninus Pius and Marcus Aurelius could have been responsible for giving citizenship to their family, but scholars have shown most of them are probably given by Caracalla.
Yeah, and so many people would have been affected by this as well. Odds are, if you find a Marcus Aurelius, it's a result of this.
Yes, definitely. So in inscriptions, in list of soldiers, it's a major impact on the empire, but it's also a sign of loyalty as well. That, you know, you have been given this privilege by the emperor. It's quite a different view of Caracalla from that which we get from Cassius Dio, from whom this is, you know, a giant tax grab.
Mm.
But Caracalla minted coins showing his indulgentia, his indulgence, his beneficence to the people of the empire. And an American scholar known as Carlos Noreña has linked this issue of coinage to the grants of citizenship to the empire, and you find inscriptions which hail Caracalla as indulgentissimus, the most indulgent, the most beneficent. So there are people there that are embracing the bounty which Caracalla is giving them.
Mm. On the flip side, is there any indication that there were people that were resentful to the rabble being let into Roman citizenship?
Yes, that's the other idea. You know, being Roman citizen is a privilege. So yes, there are certainly people who are going to resent all these people from Syria, North Africa, who previously didn't have Roman citizenship, who now possess it. And they're wealthy. So they're going to become equestrians, and they might even become senators one day and enter the senatorial order. So they're now going to be competing for office as well.
Could that be clouding Dio's account then?
Certainly. I think there are many reasons why we shouldn't necessarily take Dio's account at face value. He's very anti-Caracalla as an individual. I mean, Caracalla wasn't a nice man. Let's get that straight. I'm not an apologist.
It's strange that we're ending this episode in favour of Caracalla.
Yes. he was not a nice man. But Cassius Dio is not part of his innermost coterie, so he's feeling left out from that. And certainly the idea of distributing these Roman privileges to more people is going to rankle with many people in the senatorial order.
That's Dr. Kaelin Davenport, Senior Lecturer in Roman History at Macquarie University, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it in Apple Podcasts or your local friendly neighbourhood podcatching service. Please leave a review, as always appreciated, and they help other people find the podcast. You can like Emperors of Rome on our Facebook page, and you can follow us on Twitter. Kaelin is at Dr. C. Davenport, I am at Nightlight Guy, and the podcast is at Rome Podcast. That's it today for Emperors of Rome, so until the next episode, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.